Friends, we're leaping forward several chapters this morning, going from chapter 5 through to chapter 10. Chapter 6 of Ecclesiastes, Solomon goes on to talk about wealth and the problem of wealth under the sun, having wealth without reference to God. And then in chapter 7, Solomon begins to talk about the value of wisdom. And he tells us in 7, verse 25, that he applied his heart to know, to search, and to seek out wisdom. He goes on to tell us in that same verse that he was going to find out the wickedness of foolishness. So in chapter 10, he mainly turns his attention to foolishness, and that brings us to our topic this morning. I've got quite a bit of material to work through, but I pray that it will be profitable to us as we study the Word of God. What we have here before us is a portrait of a fool. Now, what do you think of when I use that word fool? The court jester with the funny hats and suit, or the circus clown? Who do you think of when I use that word fool? The kid in school who couldn't spell, struggled with maths, and to cover his embarrassment became the class joker. When the Bible, friends, when the Bible talks about foolishness and wisdom, it's speaking in moral categories. This isn't something you measure with an IQ test. This isn't something you measure with GCSE or A-level results. It's nothing to do with natural intelligence or cleverness or how well educated you are or not. In the Bible, it's all to do with your relationship with God. The book of Proverbs tells us the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. And what he is saying is this: you don't begin to be wise until you come to know God. A wise man is a man who knows God and lives accordingly. The psalmist tells us that the fool has said in his heart, "Know God." That's what a fool is in the Bible. According to the Bible, a fool is a man who says in his heart there is no God. Don't you come across people like that all the time? Don't you hear them on the television and radio phone-ins, people you meet on the street, perhaps people that you work with, you engage them in conversation about God and the Bible, and they dismiss it as a load of rubbish. The Bible, they tell us, is full of contradictions. And so you ask them, "Have you ever read the Bible?" And they say no. Now that's foolishness, isn't it? That's a fool. A fool is a man who says not with his head, because friends, he hasn't looked into it, he hasn't thought about it, not for one moment, but he says in his heart, there is no God. He doesn't want there to be a God. That's the fool. The Apostle Paul in Romans chapter 1 talks about this. He talks about the folks who profess themselves to be wise but have become fools. What kind of people are they? They are people, Paul tells us in Romans 1, who suppress the truth. You know, friends, what can be known of God can be clearly seen. It's clearly manifest, not only in this world, but in this universe. You know, the heavens declare the glory of God. The biblical account of creation is consistent with known science. But if you want to live your life under the sun, if you want to live your life without reference to God, you have to come up with some other explanation for the universe. And so what you have peddled today is this myth. And that's what it is, friends, the myth of evolution. You know, that it all happened as a result of random process and chance. And that's been, you know, proclaimed and heralded as an established scientific fact. And it's accepted as such because it conveniently removes God from the equation. And when discovery after discovery shows the impossibility of evolution, and that creation is one giant finger pointing back to God, instead of facing up to the truth, what these people do is try to put a lid on it. They suppress the truth. It's a bit like, you know, the person going on holiday and wants to cram everything into the suitcase but the kitchen sink. And the only way they can get the lid closed is to sit on the suitcase and suppress it. But even that's futile because there's clothes popping out all over the place. And that's what people do with the truth, according to the Apostle Paul. They suppress the truth. They put a lid on it. They try to put a lid on it rather than face it. Professor Richard Lewontin, one of the world's leaders in evolutionary biology, this is what he said. It doesn't matter what the evidence is to the contrary. We cannot allow a defined foot in the door. You know, how's that for a non-biased position? A scientist saying it doesn't matter what the evidence is to the contrary. We cannot allow a defined foot in the door. Such people profess themselves to be wise, but they are fools. Not someone intellectually deficient, as morally degenerate, spiritually dead. He prefers to live life as though God did not exist. Now, Solomon tells us a number of things about this man. Solomon tells us a number of things about this fool. He tells us about the extent of man's foolishness. Man's foolishness is universal. Now, to see the extent of this, just let's, if you have your Bibles opened, let's just drop back a few verses into chapter 9 and verse 14. There was a little city with few men in it, and a great king came against it, besieged it, and built great snares around it. Now there was found in it a poor wise man, and he, by his wisdom, delivered the city. Yet no one remembered that same poor man. Then I said, wisdom is better than strength. Nevertheless, the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words are not heard. Words of the wise spoken quietly should be heard rather than the shout of a ruler of fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. My friends, this story is universal. It could have been told at any in any place at any time. The city is saved by a local hero, similar to, you know, yesterday's little story, you know, local boy makes good. It's that kind of story. This is a story that's appreciated in every culture because it describes something that is universally true. It's a story about a man that could have quite easily come out of the book of Judges. This story could quite easily have come out of the book of Judges. Over and over again, you find this little parable acted out in the book of Judges. You find how people continually forget God. They go back to doing what is right in their own eyes. You know, that's the Frank Sinatra approach to life, isn't it? I did it my way. And that's what they keep doing in the book of Judges. They keep going back and doing it their way, instead of listening to God and His Word and His, you know, teachings. They keep going back to their foolishness. And if you're familiar with the book of Judges, you know what happens time and time again. God steps in. And He raises up from obscurity some local hero, an Eod, to deliver from the Moabites, an Othniel to deliver from the Mesopotamians, a Gideon to deliver from the Midianites, a Samson to deliver from the Philistines. Time and time again, you get this little story reenacted in Judges. But it's not only the history of Israel, is it? You know, you see it in the history of the world. It's true in our own history. You know, visit France on the 14th of July. Crowds are celebrating the storming of the Bastille in 1789. Do you know what was happening in this country at that time? We didn't have a revolution. We had a revival. Wasn't that the social problems and upheavals that France said were experiencing weren't fragmenting here? That they were the seeds of all that was happening here. But what quelled it in this country was the preaching of Wesley in Whitfield. You know, hundreds and thousands of people were saved by the Spirit of God in these islands when the French were killing hundreds of thousands. God was at work in these lands. And even the secular historian will say that what saved this country from a bloody revolution on a par with France and what was happening in Europe was the preaching of Wesley and Whitfield. Now, friends, who remembers Wesley and Whitfield today? Historically, you read about the moral and the spiritual state of this nation before Wesley and Whitfield. And you read about the effects of that revival and how the whole of this land was transformed. People transformed, families transformed, communities transformed as a result of the preaching of the glorious gospel of Jesus Christ. But friends, the point is this. Who remembers their names now? These poor, wise men that God raised up. It's exactly what Solomon is saying here, isn't it? No one remembered that same poor man. The poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words are not heard. And it's true, isn't it? You read history. Cover the 18th century evangelistic awakening. But the message that was preached and the real explanation for what happened is laughed at. And it's brushed aside. It will be explained away in terms of the interplay of sociological and economic forces. You won't hear anything of the Spirit of God at work and the message, the saving message of the gospel that transformed people's lives. The wisdom of Wesley and Whitfield, that wisdom that those men knew and preached, who remembers them today? Who cares about them today? It's forgotten. Yet God used those men to deliver this country. And this can be illustrated again and again and again in our own history. Who are the benefactors of the human race? Who do we have to thank for universities and hospitals and schools? By and large, friends, on the whole, they were the result of men and women of God, Christians. Who do we have to thank for the abolition of slavery? William Wilberforce. He was one of the results of that evangelical awakening. You know, the Great Awakening under Whitfield and Wesley. Wilberforce was one of the results of that. And the case has often been made, and it can be proved, that the trade union movement in this country rose indirectly as a result of that evangelical awakening. It was because, you see, men who had been formerly ignorant, had been living a drunken, blotted life, were changed. Their lives were transformed, they were born again, and they began to realize their dignity as men created in the image of God. Began to demand education, better working conditions. If you know your history, I'll put this out to you. I would suggest we would never have known the Reform Bill of 1832 were it not for the great evangelical awakening. You see, friends, we take so much for granted. But where did these things come from? How did these things come to us? They came to us through the preaching of the glorious gospel of Jesus Christ. But friends, who remembers that today? And you see, it's just what Solomon is saying here. It's a mad, bad world that we're living in. But why is it like that? Why is it wherever you go, you find in the world that man is such a fool? Well, Solomon gives us the answer to that in chapter 10, verse 2. This is the essence of man's foolishness. We've looked at the extent of that foolishness. Now we'll look at the essence of man's foolishness. What's he telling us in verse 2? A wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool's heart is at his left. He's telling us that the heart of the problem is the problem of the heart. He's not talking about politics, you understand. He's not talking about the loony left or the far right, for that matter. A wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool's heart at his left. What he's saying is this: a wise man's heart leads him aright, but the fool's heart leads him astray. He says in verse 3, even when a fool walks along the way, he lacks wisdom, and he shows everyone that he's a fool. A fool can't disguise what he is. However hard he tries to disguise it, it always shows. It shows in the way he walks in verse 12, and it shows in the way he talks. The words of a wise man's mouth are gracious, but the lips of a fool shall swallow him up. The words of his mouth begin with foolishness, and at the end of his talk is raving madness. You know, whether you say that's Boris or Mr. Trump, you know, it's there, isn't it? You know, the begin with foolishness and end with raving madness. And a fool also multiplies its words, it says in verse 14, no man knows what it's going to be. Who can tell him what will be after him? The labor of fools wearies them. And that's how it is, friends, isn't it? You know, they just talk words of nonsense, and they multiply words of nonsense. And it's so wearying. Well, a fool will have a lot to say for himself, but he cannot see what is plain and obvious to everyone else. The late Sir Fred Hoyle spent most of his working life at the Institute of Astronomy, Cambridge. In his book, Evolution from Space, he says, quote, the probability of life starting on its own simply from inorganic matter plus time plus chance is so incredibly small that the idea of a God who created just has to be taken seriously. Now that sounds promising, doesn't it? But what are Professor Hoyle's conclusions? Instead of accepting the truth that he himself admits, He prefers to believe that life was brought to this planet by aliens. The fool, no matter how hard he tries, cannot disguise the fact that he is a fool. Comes out in the way he walks, comes out in the way he talks. If you've watched any of the clippings on YouTube from the Answers in Genesis folk following the opening of the Ark Museum in Kentucky, Bill Nye went round the museum with Ken Ham, and there's part of the clip where Bill Nye is saying that it's not improbable that life on this planet resulted as a result of Martians. You know, life came to this planet from Mars. And he says that. It's straight from Fred Hoyle. And in fact, Bill Nye goes on to say, and we have proved it. We've proved that life came from Mars. And Ken Ham interjected right away, and he says, proof? Where's the proof? Where's the evidence? And Bill Nye went on the back foot and says, well, we haven't quite got it yet, but we're sending space probes. And those space probes will prove it. You see the foolishness? Just what Solomon is saying here, the fool. No matter how hard he tries to disguise it, cannot disguise it. Jesus says, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. The foolish things people do, the foolish things people say, just comes out of their heart. And what's in the heart? Moral stubbornness, a refusal to face the truth which they know in their heart is true. We're told people are far too sophisticated these days to believe in God. So what do they believe in? They believe in all sorts of nonsense. You know, the psychic readings, the horoscopes, the aliens. It's more comfortable to believe in an alien, isn't it? It's more comfortable to believe that life came from Mars because an alien in Mars isn't going to hold you to account. There's no accountability there. But a living creator God, it's different, isn't it? He's going to call you to account. And why is man like this? Solomon tells us here, it's all to do with the heart. The source of our problem is the human heart. That's why he says in verse 1, dead flies putrefy the perfumer's ointments and cause it to give off a foul odor. He's describing the human heart. He's saying that your heart and mine has a tendency to corrupt, or to put it as he does here, sin is the fly in the ointment. Just as the decaying body of a little insect trapped inside the most expensive perfume will ruin it, turn it into something repugnant, turn something that is fragrant and beautiful into something foul and useless, so sin has spoiled man. That's the teaching of the Bible. Man was created in the image of God. Your life is meant to be fragrant and sweet in the nostrils of God, but instead, if the truth be told, your life is a stench in the nostrils of God. Sin, you see, sin is the fly in the ointment. Sin has spoiled something that is meant to be beautiful. You know, it was only a little thing when Adam and Eve took the forbidden fruit. But look at the mess it brought. When David walked the battlements, it was just a little glance. Just a passing glance as he watched Bathsheba bathe. No harm in that. Just a little look. David never lived down the stink of that scandal. He never recovered. He was never the same man again. Just a little glance. And it ruined his life, spoiled his life. The best of us, the most respected of us, have a tendency by nature towards evil. Our hearts are naturally corrupt. This is what Solomon says in Proverbs 22 Verse 15, foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. Why is man such a fool? Where does this foolishness come from? Has it to do with his lack of education? Has it to do with his environment? Has it to do with his social upbringing? How does he become such a fool? Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child. I was born in sin. I was shapen in iniquity. That's the problem we have. That's why nothing but the gospel of Jesus Christ, friends, will meet man's need. That is why nothing less than a supernatural work of God in your life will meet your need. You know, friends, it's not religion we need. It's not a moral touch-up to improve our lives. We need a new birth. We need to be born again. We need a new heart. We need something that only Almighty God can give us through His beloved Son, Jesus Christ. So what's the evidence of this? We've seen the extent of man's foolishness, the essence of man's foolishness. Now what's the evidence? Well, Solomon goes on to describe some of the silly things people do in his culture. He's using a little Eastern humor to illustrate his point. So from verse 8 following, he's really poking fun at the man who tries to live his life under the sun, the man who tries to live his life without reference to God, and he's showing us some of the things fools do. In verse 8, a fool will dig a hole only to fall into it. He demolishes a building, and the whole building collapses in on top of him. A fool chops away at a log of wood with a blunt axe. The chippings fly up into his eyes. He mentions a snake charmer bitten by his own snake. The man who breaks through a wall only to be bitten by a serpent. All these things are tongue-in-cheek, but it's true to life, isn't it? It's not just how life is today. What do people do? They try to break through the hedges of God's restraints, and they wonder why they get bitten. For example, God has said, "You shall not commit adultery." But who cares about that today? Nobody believes in that nowadays. Don't have to take notice of that. So they break through the hedges. They try to break through God's restraints. And then they wonder why they get bitten. Then they wonder why they get hurt. Then they wonder why there's broken homes and why society is falling apart and why there are children who don't know who their dad is. You see, friends, God's laws, those hedges have been built into our life, not to spoil our life, not to curtail our lives or ruin our lives. They are there to protect us. God's law is there for our good. But man tries to break through God's law. That, you see, is the essence of folly, and the evidence of that is all around us. Man thinks he knows better than God. So he tries to break through God's restraints and gets bitten. Isn't that what's happening in our society today? And people are quite open about it. God says marriage is between one man and one woman. Our government says no, it's not. We can redefine that. It can now be between two men and two women. The humanist society, who have the ear of the government, will tell you that they are trying to undo the harm that Christianity has done. Trying to undo what Christianity has built up over the centuries. They think that this is something that they have to bring down. And as they are doing it, they are undoing the very fabric of society. The whole house is caving in upon them. And friends, it's not that they are oblivious to the harm that they are doing. You know, and I know, it's reflected in the lyrics of the songs that they that they're writing and singing, that they are perfectly aware of the dreadful consequences of the road that they're on. Barry McGuire singing about the eve of destruction. Don't you believe, as you look at society, don't you believe we're on the eve of destruction? You know, he's talking about the A-bomb, but friends, there's a moral meltdown. You look at society crumbling around us. Creedence Clearwater Revival. I see a bad moon arising. Who doesn't in our own society? They can see it. That's what I'm saying, friends. These fools, they can see it. They know that they're going to fall into this hole that they're digging for themselves headlong. But they're offering no answers or no solutions. They prefer darkness rather than light. The foolish man digging a pit and falling into it himself. We have transgender societies and universities, men dressing as women, women dressing as men, the National Health Service funding sex changes, Lloyd Bank now telling its staff members that through their medical scheme they can have sex changes funded through that scheme. Madness. Because man thinks he knows better than God. And some men think they're women trapped inside a man's body and vice versa. No, God says, I created you in the beginning. Male and female. He created them. No mistakes. No men trapped inside women's bodies and vice versa. God created them. Friends, let's not be intimidated by these fools. These so-called great people of the world. This man thinking he knows better than God. And making a complete and total mess of it. And finally and briefly. Where's all this going to end? Verse 20. Do not curse the king even in your thought. Do not curse the rich even in your bedroom. For a bird of the air may carry your voice, and a bird in flight may tell the matter. Where is all this going? Well, he tells us there. A little bird told me. That's what he's talking about there in verse 20. Walls of ears. Do you ever wonder where that expression came from? Walls of ears. You know, we think our sophisticated bugging techniques and phone tapping devices are new. It's never been like that before. It's nonsense, friends. It was happening in Solomon's day. The point of this is this. If the intelligent networks of a government can tell you what you're saying in your bedroom to your wife, do you think you will escape? Do you think what you're doing will escape God's notice? Do you really think God is oblivious to what is happening? Do you think he's gone to sleep? Do you think he doesn't care? Do you really think that God is oblivious to what is happening in your life? Do you shut your eyes to God, pretend that he's not there, prefer not to see him? It isn't that you don't know he's there. The Bible tells us that everybody knows that there is a God. There's no such thing as an atheist. It's not that people don't know, they don't want to know. And so they suppress the truth, they put the lid on the truth. And friends, is that what some folks here, maybe who are not believers, are doing? Screwing your eyes tight, trying to shut God out. And do you really think by shutting your eyes to God that he's going to go away? Do you really think that if you try to blot God out or ignore him, that he's going to go away? If that's you, then this portrait is you. This portrait of a fool is a portrait of you. Do you really think by closing your eyes, screwing them tight, that God doesn't know what's going on in your life? You must be a fool. You see, friends, we're talking about God now. We're not talking about the CIA, we're not talking about MI6, we're talking about the living God whose eyes see everything. There are no secrets from God. There's nowhere you can go to hide from God. And if you're trying to cover things in your life and think, yeah, I'm getting away with it, God says there's a day of judgment coming. And it's going to be shouted from the housetops. God sees what's going on behind closed doors. There is nothing secret, nothing hid from his eyes. Are you living a lie? You know, what are you hiding from your wife? What are you hiding from your husband? What are you hiding from your sons, your daughters? What's happening in secret? Come on, God knows. And one day it's going to be shouted from the housetops. Yes, there is a day coming when every wrong is going to be put right, a day of judgment. And on that day, everything will be in the open. Just listen to how Solomon puts it in Proverbs 28:13. He who covers his sins will not prosper, but whoever confesses and forsakes them will have mercy. And friends, that's it in a nutshell, isn't it? If you try to cover your sins, pretend they don't matter, you're not going to prosper. But if you confess your sin to a merciful and a loving and a compassionate and a gracious God, he will cleanse your sin and bring you into his family. It's the fool who tries to cover his sin. It's the fool who tries to ignore his sin. You don't want to be that stupid, do you? But he who confesses, he who forsakes, will have mercy. May God graciously bless the preaching of his word to each of our hearts today.